This recording is a production of the Conservative Anabaptist Education Committee. This presentation was recorded at the Conservative Anabaptist School Board Institute 2017, held in Sugar Creek, Ohio on March 3 and 4.
I know now we have a question in our mind. Okay, we've talked about this thing, we've kind of identified it, but what do we do about it? That's usually the first question that follows something like that. What do we do about it? Well, we want to fix the problem. But can you fix brain development? Yes, you can this part of it. I'm going to start some lap, but the extras, just we'll get them back to the front. We think of what we've discussed already. I don't know if any of you have began to identify with this thing, but there's things that we can read and we can look at in studying dyslexia to understand. I guess I need to stay in front of this thing. To help us understand exactly what's happening and what can be done about it. Okay, when we think of what actually is going on with dyslexia, a difference in brain development and the processing issue and the struggle with processing, there's a very good book. You might want to write this title down. It's Overcoming Dyslexia by Sally Shaywitz. And Shaywitz is Shaywitz. Sally Shaywitz. Shaywitz. It's an unusual name with a different spelling. She's a doctor. She's a physician that specializes in working with children or people with processing issues. And she's worked quite extensively and quite in depth with this thing. So she has got a book that is just, it's a fairly easy book to read and understand. It's not as complicated as some of them are on brain processing, but it does a wonderful job of explaining what's going on in a dyslexic's life and gives you some very good pictures of how to deal with it. You're receiving handouts on what does and what doesn't work. And the reason we've done this, that list of things that will work are going to mostly be what we call Orton-Gillingham-based programs. But who is Orton and Gillingham? Those are two different individuals. One, Dr. Orton, was a psychologist. He was the man that got to see a lot of these children that couldn't survive in school. And teachers couldn't figure out what was wrong. No one could figure out what was wrong. They'd take them to him and he would analyze them. And he started finding consistencies in these children that struggled with processing letters. Very significant consistency. So he had discovered, he'd gotten on to the trail of what's going on here, but what do you do about it? The simple problem is they can't understand how words work. Do you understand what tools you use when you sit down and pick up something to read? You are using your phonetic knowledge, your phonics. That's where you understand what letters or symbols make what sounds. And then also all the rules and how to put these together to develop words. And as this system works, it's kind of complicated. But he understood what was going on here, and he could see the consistency of it. But he knew it had to do with language. So he went to Dr. Gillingham, which was a language pathologist or a specialty in teaching. She was a specialist in language. As she listened to his story, she couldn't really relate to it at first. Now, she knew all about teaching language and how language works from one end to the other. But finally, she got the vision. They got together, and that's where we come up with the Orton-Gillingham approach. He had the idea of what's broken. She had the idea of how to fix it. And it's not a new program. Some people think this thing's relatively new. It's not. This took place in the 30s. It was mostly used in adult literacy education. You know, like these places an adult can go to learn to read and get themselves vamped up and go take their GED and get back out into life after they've dropped out of school and found it was a dead end. That's where it was used a lot, but it worked. So then she started developing, Sally, Susan Barton. Yeah, my name. Susan Barton became very interested in developing this program to work with children, so that the younger you catch it, working with children that are struggling in school, not just adults. She actually taught adults, is where she started. Most of what we hear about Susan Barton, and you've got a page there that shows things that work, and those are things that she actually says are proven to work. Of course, her program is on there. My wife and I, we took that course on brain development and processing under her program, which was under the University of San Diego, and that just really opened up our eyes as to what can be done. This is not just among our people. Don't think that we're just kind of catching. This is the newest thing running down the grapevine. It's not. These grapes have been on the vine a long time. But in our class that we took this course under, there was about 150 people in that class, and almost all of them were people that had, you know, letters behind their names, and they were like neuropsychologists and language pathologists. And their question was, why didn't they teach us about dyslexia, what we're learning in this course? That's because dyslexia hasn't been understood that way. But we took the course so that we would have tools to pass out as we travel around and visit schools, and we would also be able to actually screen and know what we're seeing when we screen. But go to the one that says what won't work. This is what I want to draw your attention to. Hang on to this list. There are things out there that are popular, but that does not mean they work. And in this college course, they weren't siding up with anybody. They wanted us to clearly understand what doesn't work because it doesn't address the issues of dyslexia. The only issue that a dyslexic has is he does not have his tools to work with in a way that he knows where they are. And I made the mention that 1 out of 5 people are dyslexic. Let's talk about those 5 children. Okay, we're going to say we have 5 children here. And these 5 children, I'm going to put them through a phonics program. We all do this in our first grades. And I'm going to hand out, we'll say, I work with CLE, so we'll say learning to read, which is our phonics. And we're going to hand it out. Here we go. Every day we're going down through there at the rate of just about a letter a day. Most phonics programs move right along, right briskly. Okay, we're moving through this phonics program. These children are catching these phonetic tools, and they're storing them away in their tool chest, and they know exactly where they are. And as we move through this phonics program, I've got, of these 5, I have 1. I can't see it's happening, but he only catches a tool once in a while because it's coming to him way too fast. They're flying past. They're sliding by. He catches one, and he slams it in that tool chest so fast, he doesn't really remember where it is. He's just glad he has one to put in there. And when I'm through with this program, I have given them all the same tools, right? I pitched them at them anyhow. How many of them have all their tools? They're going to take this tool chest and go to work for life. These tools are the tools they're going to unlock the way words work. And as these 4 sit down every day and go to their work, they open and close drawers just as smoothly, pulling out, this is why you always use this letter, this is why you never use this letter, you know, and they're going to work. I've got this one that just struggles and struggles. And I can't understand what's going on here. He looks normal, looks okay, but there's definitely starting to define itself as an issue. And since I can't see anything physically amiss, and he's a bright child, do wonderful things with his hands. Give him some Legos and watch him perform. That's because it's stepping over into his area of brain process. But in the classroom, things aren't going well. So I start to wonder about him. And you know, really all that's hindering that child from performing is he's sitting down to face his educational experience with not a full chest full of tools, but only a handful. And that makes him work 10 times harder than the other 4. But I can't see it. But that child is working harder than you can ever imagine to do what he does do. But yet he's not performing up to expectations. So I'm developing reasons and ideas of my own as to what's going on. I mentioned things like attitudes and things like that. Well, there's a list of things there, and I want you to keep that list of things that won't work to where you can remember, because some of them are popular, but they don't address the phonetic needs of a child. That's all a dyslexic needs. He needs his tools to work with. So let's look at giving him his tools to work with. Let's look at things that can hinder phonetic knowledge. Okay, one of the first things we want to do is we want to check their eyes. Make sure that little Johnny sees well, that his eyes are focusing well. And I'm not talking about going to Walmart. Don't have any problem with Walmart. But you really need to go to a reputable eye doctor that's going to have some knowledge of working with educational issues. They look at things differently. They look for more in-depth brain processing, because we do see issues where children appear to be dyslexic, but really, we had one just lately. We actually even screened the little boy, and he screened out dyslexic, but his parents took him to get his eyes checked. And before we started any programs on him, we wanted to see what's going on here. And we found out that his eyes aren't focusing at the same place at the same time. The poor little boy, when he sees things to read, he sees, one eye sees at one point, one sees at another, and his brain's working, trying to pull these things together. And this is the way he works, and he doesn't know anything different. He's always seen that way. So because of that effort, that's what hindered his ability to get his phonetic tools. Yes, by all rights, he was dyslexic, but not because of brain design. He was that way because of a vision issue. Now, we hear of things about vision called vision therapy, you know, training the eyes to see things. You're not going to teach a child to see words any differently with vision therapy. What they need to do is to understand how words work, and that's done with your phonics. So getting them their phonetic tools. Another thing is to get their ears checked. Because if a child can't hear correctly, she can't put all the sounds together. The sounds she's coming into her neurological system may be just a little bit off. And therefore, it's hard for her to attach that sound with the symbol that represents it. And the whole system starts to snarl. We had a little girl that was performing poorly. Through the first grade till she got to the second grade, it really looked like there's going to be some type of an issue here like dyslexia. But the teacher told me one day that she walked past that little girl and she mentioned something to her and she didn't respond. And she didn't think anything of it. She just thought she's not paying attention. Then the next time something like that happened, she was a little further away, but she was behind her. And she called her name. And the little girl didn't acknowledge the teacher. She called her name again a little louder. This caused some concern. And being that little girl also had an issue with learning, we took her, or her parents did, and had her ears checked. She's almost deaf in one ear and was impaired in the other one. She never knew anything different. She's this way from birth. She thought the little bit of sound that her brain could process was the only sound that there was. And it was getting worse because she was getting fluid in the one good ear she had. So, hearing aids fix that little girl's problem. Those are nice stories because we can fix it that easily. Okay, let's look at, when we look at working with a child and they need a phonetic program, how confusing. I talked a little bit about the telephone box. It's just a very complicated wiring. Now, when we start thinking about phonetically rewiring the way a child thinks, that's a complicated process. But that's what we're going to do if we're going to give them tools to work with. We're actually going to phonetically rewire the way they think, because the processor they were born with isn't processing well for them. Just like the child that was missing the hand at birth, wouldn't it be much better just to get them some type of prosthesis to work with? Sure it would. Let's see what we can do for this child. Let's get them their phonic. And there's some things that I'd like to talk to us about in the way we operate in our classrooms that is a handicap to children that process slowly. One of them, probably a lot of you are going to be able to identify with in here, is timed word lists, timed things that are done under the restraints of time. Good old victory drill. Victory drills have some very good word lists that are on grade level. They'll enlarge the vocabulary. That's what they're designed to do. But the timer part's the issue. Time complicates a person that's under pressure, that's turning the gears hard, and then give him a certain time to get the gears turned. and you've just added some sand to the gears. Timers have a place. If there's any in here, we'll open that window and we'll show you the place. I don't know where they are in a classroom, to be just to be serious with you, in schoolwork. Mr. Witt did away with his timer when he became a teacher, because I knew what they did to me, and I couldn't understand what they're going to do for my students. What in life do we need to know how to do fast if we're going to do well? Well, if you're all going to be firemen, that's okay. You need to pull your boots on fast and run at the same time. That's what those guys can do. But no, we don't need time. We need quality. We need mastery. And to add time to it really is one tough thing for children that process difficult. Speed drills. For some reason, the educational field, now I'm probably stepping in some people's pockets even here, but the educational field thinks if we can do it fast, we can do it better. But we don't realize that 1 out of 5 over here that we just pushed in a corner real hard right there. In life, Susie's going to mop the floor for Mama. Mama wants Susie to get her bucket full of water and her mop and do a good job. It's not, okay, Susie, 1, 2, 3, mop, 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 Susie, mop, push the mop, Susie. You know, that's not what it's all about. No, that's not what life is about. It's do a good job. There are a lot of ways to be creative, teachers, or school boards. I'm sorry, I'm used to speaking to more teachers. There's a lot of ways to be creative and create ways to help children want to get their work done and to pull together without setting the timer. We had a little girl just last week that we were screening, and my wife was doing this screening, and she asked her, "Are you going to time me?" She said, "No." "Why? Don't you like timing?" She said, "No." She said, "I can't ever finish my time, my speed drills and my math. I can't ever." And she knows that. She's in the second grade, and she knows that there's a lot of other children that finish theirs. She can never finish hers. And she doesn't sound like she has any hope of doing it. What does it matter if she gets the last one done before ding? You know what it feels like to a child that gets all of their math problems done and the teacher says, "Bring them up and put them on the desk when you're finished"? That's a good feeling. I finished them. I'm done. We can condition children to accept themselves as failures. And that's something we need to be careful how we do that. Another way that happens is our promotion and motivation charts that are on the walls. You know, we want that child to see how good they're doing. And again, this works just like a timer does. It's a comparison type thing. We want them to see how good they're doing by what standard? By comparing ourselves among ourselves? I've been there, folks. The chart that every time we make a 100, you get to put something up or we get to acknowledge it somehow. What about the folks, the little fellow that can never make a 100? I was there. I wanted to make a 100. I had no idea why I couldn't make a 100, but I just knew I never got one. And I also never got to contribute. We walk into classrooms, like we travel a lot. We see some very nice motivation charts. You can tell there's some thought and some ingenuity put into these things. But, you know, the nice little train up there, and they got a whole line of cars behind them, and that represents some kind of accomplishment. Then you see the little train down here. It has 2 cars back there. That's where my heart goes right there. You know what happens right there? That little, whoever that train belongs to, he not only sees that every day when he comes in class, but he knows everybody else sees it too. And it reminds him of a fact that he's a failure, and that he can't rise to the challenge that his classmates. And that's heavy baggage to carry for a child that's dealing with something that's just like the color of his hair. He had no choice about it. It came from through his genetic pool. So we need to think about things in our schools that help make opportunity for all children, but especially the ones that are showing processing issues. We would make those exceptions for handicap. This isn't even a handicap. This is just a difference. What are some of the things that we can do? Well, I mentioned getting rid of the timers. What about flashcards? Flashcards are good. They're somewhat of a timed issue, but they don't have to be. There's a way to do flashcards, and then there's a better way to do flashcards. We had someone that was an experienced first grade veteran to share this with us. We shared it last year in our school visits And this year, teachers are telling us, you know that little tip you showed me last year? It's great. It works. And this is all it is. When you take a flashcard, I've got a stack of flashcards here. And if I hold that flashcard up for that child to say, whatever the combination is, when they say it, I lay it down. Okay, when they are looking at, when you first flipped it up there, something happened. Their brain reached for those numbers, but then it relaxed. And it stares at them and stares at them, and it's trying to, process the numbers. And I'm digging through all these little piles of symbols up there that represent answers and putting them together, and finally I'll say the answer. Now, I'm making it real slow, but I say the answer. Okay, what you're allowing that child to do is actually fall back off task. I'll show you a better way to do it. Take a flashcard, pick it up long enough for the child to completely identify it, and lay it down at that point. Get ready to get your next. You're not going to hold it there and let them just stare at it and fall back off task. If you want that flashcard to help them give a spontaneous answer of math facts, make that brain work that way. Hold it up there, let them see it, and lay it down. And what will happen is, and that child, it's going to take, now if you're used to doing it the other way, it's going to take a little bit of explaining and working with them. But what they'll do is tell them you're going to get one look at it. So believe you me, they're going to be ready. And when you show it to them and lay it down, what happened was, pop, that brain grabbed those numbers. And he knew that's the only chance he's going to get. But what it doesn't realize is that in that momentum of grabbing for those numbers, it also will quickly snatch the answer off the hard drive with it. It won't be this thing of just sifting around through numbers trying to think, that's 12, It'll happen, and it'll improve, and it'll sharpen. But that thing of holding it while they can just stare at it, it's just a little something that we found. It's a neurological tip. It works. That thing of making them reach for it, making their brain jump for it. Okay, I'm going to give you, while we're talking about math, I'm going to give you another one that you can look up online if you haven't heard of this. It's called Times Tales, T-A-L-E-S, Times Tales. This is a good one to look up online and see what it's about. This helps with multiplication and division. And what this does is it ties things to math facts. It ties pictures, a little saying, and what I call handles to help a child remember it. That's what children that struggle need. They need extra handles. And it does that. I was watching this thing. I had given this information to a teacher this past year. We were visiting that school, and I saw him working with the student that was struggling, and he was holding up a card that had this math problem on it, and the little boy was there. He was staring at that thing. I could tell he's grinding. He's trying to get through his facts, and the teacher just turned it around. There was a picture on the back. The picture didn't mean a thing to me, but it did to him. Because he knew the stories that went with these things. Those were his handles. He turned it around, and as soon as the boy saw that picture, he said, oh, that's 14. Now, there had been something attached to that picture. Some children need those attachments, those associations. Because dyslexics, particularly, see a lot in pictures. We see objects in our mind. We have to understand, and don't ask me why, we have to understand why something works and how it works. Just to tell me it works doesn't cut it. I've got to understand how it works and why it works. Then I'm okay with it, and I've also probably got it better than you do. My dad used to say, son, you've torn up more things than you'll ever fix in your life. I'm a licensed electrician, a certified welder. I fix things, but I have to understand how things work, and I couldn't tell you why. But I understand more of that now. That's the way of dyslexia. My wife is very non-dyslexic. We travel a lot. Everywhere we go, she carries her little bag of reading things everywhere we go. And it contains, if nothing else, the budget. When we pull into a motel in the evening and she has her bag of reading supplies there, she has all she needs. I'm looking for something to look at. Not to read, to look at. I've memorized a lot of Quality Inn. You know that little book that tells you where all things are found? It's just the difference. It's a difference in a thinking pattern. It is a whole different thinking pattern. And there's nothing wrong. Not a thing in the world. Another illustration that maybe would help you understand how thinking patterns differ. If I would, you know what, do you understand what Uno cards are? It's a game card game. They have numbers and colors to them. If I would give a non-dyslexic a stack of Uno cards that are all mixed up, and I'd say put them in order for them, they would go to it and put them in some type of a logical order, because that's the way they think. If I would hand a dyslexic a stack of Uno cards, and I'd say put them in order, he would probably turn them over a couple of times and around trying to figure out what's the logical, I mean, what? It's a stack of cards. Probably sooner or later, boom, down on the top of the table, they're going to go. And that's good enough for him. He might scrape them together in a little pile, but that's okay. We say, well, look at all the logic in this. Look at this pile. This mess needs some help. But I'm going to tell you something. It's out of this mess right here that our inventors, our architects, our computer geeks, that's where they, it's out of that mess. It's because they're not afraid to think differently. These people, they don't like to get outside the box. They're very secure inside the box. If I would tell this one, give me a green 5, they would very quickly produce a green 5 for me. If I would tell this one, get me a green 5, cards would start to flip and flop and fly all over the place. And if they can still remember what they're looking for, they probably will get me a green 5 sooner or later. But there's nothing wrong here. There's nothing. God didn't make a mistake in either place. Because these people are out there thinking beyond the boundaries. They're not afraid to think there. These people don't go there because the book doesn't say you can. The book says this is all it takes to do. This is all you ask. I can perform and stay secure and safe here. These people don't know what safety means. They don't even know how to spell it. So they're not afraid to grope around out there. And this person thinks securely inside the box. This person's never been in the box. So they don't understand. But is there fault in either place? No. These people with all their ideas, their discoveries, we need these folks to take those things and put them into some logical way of use. It's these people that write the manuals that tell us how to assemble the inventions of these people and how these things work. Now, the difference between myself and a non-dyslexic, if we're going to assemble something here and you'd hand me a manual, what am I going to do with the manual? I'm going to put it together 3 times the wrong way before I figure out how to do it. But when I do, I'll know how to put it together. And I'll be completely satisfied that I figured it out. The non-dyslexic, they're going to read the manual, and they're going to put it together systematically. And they're going to tell me, if I would just read the manual, I would see that that piece goes on before this piece, so I don't have to take it back off to put the screw in the other piece. Me, you give me the manual, and I start a fire with it. There's nothing wrong with either one. I have things to learn from these people. I think they have some things to learn from these too. God created both of them just like they are. What are some things we can do for children that process differently in the classroom? This place is minus a clock. Oh, I thought you whispered something to me. I'm usually in trouble when you do that. Okay. Am I reading this piece of paper right? At 3:45 I was supposed to be through. Okay. I had this hot feeling. Told me to look at my watch. Okay. Let me jump into this thing here. Let's talk about what can fix this thing. I'm going to point you towards something that works, and that's going to be the Barton program. Some of you have probably heard of it. Maybe it's the first time some of you have heard of it. The Barton program, if you're not familiar with the Barton program, it is an Orton-Gillingham-based program. I would encourage you to go online if that's available to you and Google Susan Barton. And this is a program that we have started in a number of different states. We do this just because we know it works. And we can point people towards something that actually works and produces results. It is nothing but a phonetic program. It's phonics designed specifically like a dyslexic thinks. And it comes to them in a way that they can hang on to it. And when you go through all 8 levels of this program, there's 8 levels in the phonics program. When you go through all 8 levels in this program, they'll have their phonetic tools. Don't stop before you get through all 8 levels. If you're going to stop, don't start, because they need it all. But this program, I'll be glad to talk with any of you later or more. In particular, my wife has actually tutored the program. So to stay in good graces with the committee. I'll close with one thing that was it's a saying that you might be familiar with. It was Benjamin Franklin says, "Tell me and I forget. Teach me and I remember, but involve me and I learn." That third step involves several different things. You have actually let me become part of it, and I am interacting with it. I'm touching it. I'm doing it. Everything we can do with children that gives them more neurological input will help stamp it on the hard drive a little bit harder.
This recording and many others are available through Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. Order online at www.christianlearning.org or call 877-222-4769.